Welcome back to Putting It Together, the podcast that discusses Stephen Sondheim's entire body of work, chronologically, show by show, and song by song. Because we are going chronologically, we are starting with West Side Story, which is having a bit of a renaissance. We discussed the Steven Spielberg film that is currently in pre-production, but there's also another Broadway revival coming December 2019. I'll get to that in a minute. This week, we will be discussing Tony and Maria's duet, Tonight, which is basically two young people singing about their lust, 1950s edition. To help me discuss that, I invited on Eric Stadnick, a podcaster himself and currently teaching English in Prague. This was a really fun conversation, and not just because I was able to make him laugh a few times, but mostly that. I also need to thank the incredible response that I've received about this podcast. After a rocky launch because of Apple not approving the podcast very fast, the fans of Sondheim have really started to come out. Thank you so much to everyone who has subscribed, who has told another person, who has shared it on social media. I absolutely, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate it. New podcasts are incredibly hard to launch, so all your help is so lovely. So thank you so much. And because I get analytics for where this podcast is being downloaded, I want to give a huge shout out to South America, specifically Brazil, Chile, and Argentina, who have been big supporters of this show. If I knew any Portuguese or Spanish, I would say something, and Feliz Navidad seems inappropriate right now. I should also thank all the listeners here in Alberta. Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. There are so many great shows on the network, but one that I'll highlight this week is Blue in the Face, another show that talks about music. Chris Ursaki focuses on art, culture, music, and food in Alberta that is having an impact locally, nationally, and even internationally. You can listen to Blue in the Face and all the great shows at albertapodcastnetwork.com. We're also sponsored this week by LitFest. Edmonton is the home of Canada's first and only nonfiction festival, which is LitFest, if you haven't guessed already. It runs October 11th to 21st and features dozens of events with writers from across the country and beyond, all sharing true stories and big ideas about culture, food, science, politics, and more. Among the writers are award-winning poet Billy Ray Belcourt, musician and documentarian Dave Bedini, and Rachel Giza, author of Boys, What It Means to Become a Man. That's just a sample. There are many more listed at litfestalberta.org. Festival passes are only $129. Four packs and single tickets are also available, but you can get $5 off by using the promo code APNROCKS. That's APNROCKS. Get your tickets today at litfestalberta.org. So West Side Story has been revived many, many times on Broadway. This time, it'll be directed by celebrated director Ivo van Hove and choreographer Anne-Theresa de Keersmaker. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. But deference has always been paid to the original choreography by Jerome Robbins, a man that Stephen Sondheim has said is the only genius he's ever met. Well, what makes this 2019 revival so interesting is that they aren't going to be using that choreography. This is from TheGuardian.com. De Keersmaker's exacting dance productions with her company have included perceptive responses to the music of composers including Bach, John Coltrane, and Brian Eno. Van Hove is best known for a stripped-back, barefoot production of A View from the Bridge, which transferred from the Young Vic to the West End and Broadway, where it won him a Tony Award. He later directed Ben Whishaw in The Crucible in New York. Sondheim is also quoted in this article. He says, "What keeps theater alive over time is reinterpretation. And when that reinterpretation is as invigorating as his productions of A View from the Bridge and The Crucible, it makes for something to look forward to with excitement." So I would consider that a blessing. Before we jump into my conversation of Tonight with Eric, I want to mention again that we are using three productions of West Side Story to frame our discussions. The first being the original Broadway cast recording, the second being the movie version, and the last being the Broadway revival from 2009. You can listen to any or all of these on any streaming service that I looked at. Also, I am utilizing the phenomenal book that Sondheim wrote called Finishing the Hat. If you don't own a copy already, you need to, like, right now. Go get it. Okay, after listening to a small snippet from Tonight, we will hear my really great talk with Eric Stadnick. One thing, we were talking on Skype, so you will definitely hear a difference in quality between myself and him, but it doesn't ruin the discussion. So let's jump into that conversation I had with Eric Stadnick about Tonight from West Side Story.
Tonight, tonight, It all began tonight. I saw you and the world went away.
So thank you so much, Eric Stadnick, for joining me here today.
I thank you so much for having me, Kyle.
All the way from Prague, correct?
Yes, yes. Not native born, as you might imagine from the accent.
Right. It's the miracle of technology that we're being able to talk to each other here today. And a very big time difference, but we're making this work, which is great. Before we jump into talking about our song here today, I thought maybe the audience should know a little bit more about you. So why don't you talk a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm an English teacher here in Prague. That's why I'm here. But I lived most of my adult life in Washington, D.C. And part of D.C., one of the reasons D.C. is great that people don't know about is that it actually has a really cool theater scene. A lot of really great theaters, including, among others, the Signature Theater, which is like Sondheim heaven in some ways. It's just sort of being an adult there and sort of generally getting into theater in my 20s. I sort of started stumbling across various Sondheim things on DVD and production. I think the first actual Sondheim show I watched in full was actually the review Putting It Together.
Wow.
The DVD that came out with Carol Burnett and John Barrowman and George Hearn and Ruthie Henshaw.
Absolutely.
And Hudson Pinchot, of all people. I think that's where I first, because I'd followed John Barrowman over from Doctor Who. I already knew some Sondheim, but I was sort of not the devotee I am now. But then once I was sort of in, it was like, oh, you can do this with songs. You can do this with musical theater. Oh, wow. Okay, then. Since then, I've made a point of seeing almost all of his shows live, and the ones I haven't seen live, I've seen either officially or unofficially in various ways. So I have a pretty good sense of most of his work, and am consistently in awe that one man has done all of these things.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you really look at the body of work. Putting It Together is not a bad first show to go to as far as reviews go, and it's why I am stealing that name to call this podcast what it is. So
I didn't even know that. Then. Yeah. There it is.
I know. Look at that synergy. It's happening right in front of us. What would you say currently, at least, this can sometimes change, but what would you say currently is your favorite Sondheim show?
It's almost always, unless I'm in a bitter mood, in which case, if I'm in a bitter mood, the answer is Follies.
Okay.
Every other mood, though, including my normal mood, it's Into the Woods.
Into the Woods. Okay, cool. We're aligned on that then. That was also my first one I really, really saw, I think, on stage was Into the Woods.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen, I think, four or five different productions now, including one production five times, I think, I went.
Wow, okay.
It was in D.C. sort of over the Christmas holidays, and several friends all said, I want to take you to Into the Woods for your Christmas present. And I said yes to all of them. So
yes, correct. You will do that.
Exactly. Only after they bought the tickets did I say, oh, three other people were doing this too. But it was a fantastic production. So I was happy to see it again and again.
That's cool. What's your background here with West Side Story then?
So West Side Story is interesting because it is, you know, like Gypsy, it's you know, and what is it? Do I Hear a Waltz? It's one of the redheaded stepchildren of the Sondheim oeuvre because he didn't do music. And I find it, you know, I liked it well enough and I liked it more when I was younger. But I think it's actually really sappy in many ways.
Interesting. And
I think I have the same issues with it that, especially lyrically, that Sondheim himself expresses having with it, in that it, when it's at its best, it feels very real, but then there are large chunks of it where it feels like a bunch of grown-ups writing for teenagers.
Yeah, which is always the hardest thing. Being this as an adaptation kind of Romeo and Juliet, it's mm-hmm. also my issue with Romeo and Juliet that unless you really get or cast teenagers in that role, it feels really weird to have like 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds acting the way that they are.
And I'm, you know, just on that note, not to derail it into dramaturgy, but like Romeo and Juliet arguably is a play about teenage rebellion and how stupid teenagers are mm-hmm. when the adults are too concerned with other things to parent them.
Right.
They go off and do things like, you know, do suicide packs and run away and get married by disgraced monks.
I mean, everyone's been there.
Yeah, no, totally. But to view it as this grand romantic thing is, I think, to misread the play to some extent. So when you adapt that into West Side Story and make it this grand romantic thing, it just feels really... It's like they literally just met at the gym dance and now they're in love. Okay.
Right, yeah.
Even for a musical, that's a bit much.
Yeah, it's a little bit quick, especially with modern sensibilities. It's like, this seems very quick that this relationship is happening. But we have to, I guess, take it for what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, you know, and that's Arthur Lawrence and fine.
One other thing we've been discussing here on the show, too, is essentially the street slang that was kind of given to Sondheim that he had to kind of work with a little bit. And he says, like, this isn't really what anyone is going to say, but I guess we're going to have to roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Your listeners probably won't have heard. Well, I'm sure they know Officer Krupke, but the famous story about Officer Krupke, he wanted swear words. Sondheim wanted these kids to be like dropping F-bombs left and right, because that's how these kids talked. And instead we get what we get.
As we're recording this, I think it was yesterday or the day before, it was announced that there is a new West Side Story production that's going to be being made on Broadway. And for the very first time,
another one.
But what's interesting this time is that they're actually completely redoing the choreography. They've always crept Jerome Robbins' choreography, and this is the first time they're completely redoing it from scratch. So
interesting.
I kind of hope that they actually kind of redo some of the other stuff. Let them swear on stage. They can do it now. Why not?
Yeah. I was listening to a musical theater podcast, and they said, you know, instead of just translating the lyrics for some songs into Spanish, get Lin-Manuel Miranda to come in to write some of the lyrics for the Puerto Rican characters. Like, do something, try to really make it feel like honestly, the show I think Sondheim would have wanted it to be, instead of the show that Bernstein and Lawrence kind of put together. And Sondheim, you know, he has such distance from the show. Every time he talks about it, he's clearly just, it's, you know, and I think the fact that it's probably the show he's ever worked on that's made the most money, has the biggest cultural hit, I think probably must really chap his ass someday.
I think so. I mean, the thing about it, though, and even something that he brings up in the book Finishing the Hat, is that what he does appreciate about West Side Story the most is that he got to understand what it was like to actually collaborate on something. And he says, like, he works better if there is a collaboration of sorts going on. He still would like to do both lyrics and music, but he likes being able to work in that team atmosphere.
Yeah, he likes a strong director, a strong book writer. He gets positively schmoopy when he talks about that stuff, actually, like that that sort of family feeling. It's, you know, he's an easy crier, and this is one of the things that can make Sondheim cry, is talking about his collaborators.
That is true. And one of the other things that we've been kind of discussing as well is the fact that regardless of what we think about some of the lyrics and West Side Story as a whole, the actual music itself, like the stuff that Bernstein is doing, is undeniably, I think, very beautiful. Like he is himself a genius for what he does.
I can't fault anything that Bernstein does in this show, really. You know, he's doing this and Candide at the same time.
Yeah, which is mind-blowing.
Bonkers. plus he's doing things with the Philharmonic and whatnot. I mean, the true great, like, pure musical genius of the 20th century in America, I think, is Leonard Bernstein in some way. Not always the best at doing something for a purpose. Like, sometimes his music just feels all very similar. All sort of operatic-y. But here in West Side, though, he kind of really leans into the, you know, that sort of ness of it all, which is fun. I mean, like, the music for West Side is great. It's one of the few musicals that you can do like a series of symphonic dances of and perform as a concert piece, and thinks, oh, well, that's just musical music. This is great music.
Which, again, kind of blows my mind when you read some of the reviews from the 1950s when this came out, and people complaining about that there's no hummable songs in it. I'm like, I don't understand that criticism, because it seems like the whole thing is. But Be that as it may, let's jump into talking about the song we're going to be discussing here today, which is Tonight. And to put on some just brief context here, this is just after the dance at the gym.
Mambo!
Yeah, the mambo. And then they don't actually mambo. But yes, that's exactly what they yell out. And so we've seen Tony and Maria see each other from across the way, and they fall in love. And of course, then Tony sings his song about Maria specifically. But then after they dance together, Riff and Bernardo agree to meet for a war council at Doc's, a drugstore, which is considered neutral ground. But meanwhile, after an infatuated Tony sings his serenade to Maria, he finds himself outside her fire escape. And the two, they see each other from across the way and they profess their love for one another. This is essentially the balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet. This is what we've kind of come to here. And I will also say that if you are watching the movie, what is kind of weird is that they flip this. That in the stage play, it's this song, Tonight, and then America comes right after it. And in the movie, America happens first, and then Tonight is sung afterwards. Mm-hmm. Not 100% sure why they decided to switch it in the movie version, but...
My guess is because so they don't have the two romantic ballads beside each other, I'm guessing.
That makes sense, yeah. They wanted to...
That'd be my only guess, because it is sort of weird. It's like you get Maria, which is, again, beautiful song.
Yeah.
And one that Sondheim's very pleased with lyrically, generally. And then you get like some scene stuff. And then the next song again is Tonight, which is sort of a bigger romantic, but it's similar mode. Whereas you throw in America in there, it's sort of it's better for popcorn, I guess.
And we'll discuss this in the next episode, but we'll discuss how America is very different between stage and film on how they present that specifically. But this is... I just wanted to make sure that we reference the people who are singing on this song. What's interesting is that this is the first time that we hear Maria sing. This is the first time we've just met her, and now we're actually hearing her sing this song in a duet with Tony. We've heard Tony sing a couple of times here already. So to give credit where credit is due, if we're thinking about the original Broadway cast, this was Larry Kurt was Tony. In the movie version, he's played by Richard Boehmer, but sung by Jimmy Bryant. And then in the 2009 revival, it's Matt Cavanaugh who is singing. And then for Maria, the original Broadway cast was Carol Lawrence. In the movie, of course, played by Natalie Wood, but sung by Marnie Nixon, who some people might, their ear might tell them that it's familiar, and it is, because that's the same person who sung My Fair Lady for, not Katharine Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn.
Who sang for Audrey Hepburn. And then the 2009 revival is Josefina Scaglione, is who sang Maria. So those are our two players here that we are going to be focusing on here today. So we start off, Maria sings, "Only you, you're the only thing I'll see forever. In my eyes, in my words, and in everything I do, nothing else but you, ever." And then Tony responds, "And there's nothing for me but Maria. Every sight that I see is Maria." And then we trail off with Maria saying, "Tony, Tony." So there's a couple things here right away. One thing that we discussed in the Maria episode was the fact that Tony doesn't know anything about her. Like, literally, does not know a thing about her. Like, what she likes, what she doesn't like, what her background is, like, nothing. And so that song is so interesting because, like, he only knows her name. And that's basically what he focuses on. Her name is beautiful. Like, it sounds like the angels. Like, I just love everything about the word and the way it sounds in my ear. And that's basically what that song is just deconstructing the name Maria. And he still kind of has that carried over here into the beginning of the song.
Yes, definitely. He's still in that just Maria mode, isn't it? Say It Soft sounds like, but he's still very much in that Maria mode.
Mm-hmm. And then Maria, of course, is kind of responding here, kind of the same thing. It's like, "All I ever want to see in front of me is you." Like, this is, of course, saying up these star-crossed lovers and stuff like that as well. But this is very opulent and very romantic language that we're using.
Yeah, which I think here in this intro, and it's weird, this is the beginning of the song, but I would argue that this is actually recitative before a duet or an aria, because it's not yet to the tune of the song as or to the melody of the song yet. It's this sort of it's just warm up,
right? That's true.
And it's kind of depending on the version, it's kind of sung talked. It's kind of, you know. But I do think it's interesting. He's very much still in his Maria mode. And she, she is very, it's interesting that she starts, because mm-hmm. you're right, she hasn't sung yet. But two, it's super visual. It is about the sight of this boy in front of her. Right. All he knows is what her name is, and all she knows is that he's cute. It's kind of like, Yeah, and that he looks maybe different than the boys she usually sees, or the boys that she is supposed to be dating. Because he's not Puerto Rican.
That's right. Yeah, he's very much different.
In the movie, they do kind of... Yeah, he's very different. And so I think it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, they kind of approach it from different sides. They're meeting in the middle, but they're approaching it from different sides, which I think is quite clever. And it's not yet sort of so lofty that it sounds artificial.
Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the movie soundtrack, there's a lot of the spoken parts that they include in there as well. So you hear her like shushing her father and him coming up the fire escape and mm-hmm. all that kind of background that's kind of happening during the before the song starts and during when they're actually singing it here as well. So it's like they're infatuated with one another, but they also already know that this is not something that they can publicly announce as of yet about them falling in love. So Tony kind of goes on and says, "Always you, every thought I'll ever know, everywhere I go, you'll be." And then Maria says, "All the world is only you and me." And so that's kind of the end of this kind of a prologue, if that's what we want to say, until we get into the actual song itself and the actual melody, where Maria says, "Tonight, tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you and the world went away. Tonight, tonight, there's only you tonight. What you are, what you do, what you say." So, once again, we're being, I would say, fairly literal in mm-hmm. how she's kind of communicating her love. It's like, I want you to be the only thing I'm focusing on. And the way I'm going to do that is by what you are, what you say, and what you do, which is kind of like the character of a person. But it's like, I need to know more about you. I want to know everything about you right now.
Yeah, and I think because if you look at the balcony scene or you look at whatever in the original Romeo and Juliet, it's a ridiculous scene because they know nothing about each other. They know, right. And here you have a superbly rational man. Stephen Sondheim and Bernstein is not exactly a crazy kook, sitting there trying to musicalize in a believable way a moment where she knows what he looks like and his name, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what she looks like and her name, and that is the extent of their right? They're in love with each other.
Yeah,
and. You know, another writer would just try to do big old flights of fancy about like, oh, from today, everything will be different, you know?
Yeah.
And Sondheim's tendency is to try to keep it grounded. And so they'd sing, "Tonight, tonight, it all began tonight," whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like they know this moment is changing things. And I think that's right. And so they sing kind of about the moment itself.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting. It's like, it's not necessarily about the other person yet. It's about the moment that they happen to be in currently. It's, it's a kind of a callback because when the first song that Tony sings is Something's Coming, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I know there's something coming. There's something that's going to happen. There's some moment that's going to change my life and it's going to happen very soon. And this could be something like him trying to make sure that that prophecy becomes true a little bit, but this is him kind of coming to the realization that, oh, this is that moment they knew was going to happen here very soon, and it's her. She is the thing that's going to be happening to me. It will also be his downfall. Never date women. That's what he
said. That's the Stephen Sondheim story.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, no, but I think that's entirely right. I think it's meant to be, and you get this in music more than lyrics, but it's meant to be also a bit foreboding. Like
I think so too.
That they're so caught up literally in the moment, right? They're literally so in the moment. They don't see all the hell this is going to cause for everyone around them. And that there's like one sane mind on that balcony saying, this is never going to work. Go home, Tony. Maria, go to bed. Right. Could have saved a couple lives.
That's true. That is true. Because you're an English teacher, Eric, you probably will be more involved with this. I have an English degree myself, but I've been removed from that world for so many years here now. But in some ways, this is not similar, but it calls to mind like the Romantic poets, right? When they wrote songs about women and stuff. They always like, I'm comparing your skin to like how white it is and how jet black your hair is and all that sort of thing. And it's interesting that they don't, he doesn't fall into that, where it's not the physical beauty that he's interested in. It is just the person that he's interested in, and vice versa. They could have sang an entire song here about what each other looks like, but they don't. Yeah. It's, again, all about the moment.
And it's not even, it's not even the other thing it could be, which is sort of like, you're my ticket out of here, or you're my escape from this life. It's not that either, right? It is solely, like, it's almost, and which I think makes it very true to life. You know, sometimes you meet somebody, and those moments with them, like, that's it. That's all your head is, everything you're seeing, all the thing you're hearing is, like, that person. They just somehow snuck past your brain and went to your, like, your lizard brain or your heart or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And, like, is sort of dominating your mental processes. And this is kind of just a little song about that.
Yeah. You better be careful, Eric. We might have a moment with each other here pretty soon, so.
I think, you know, it's not my favorite song in the show by any means, because I think there are some issues later on that Bernstein imposed, but I think, I think especially this first stanza, like, if we want to call it that, which also, you know, I don't think is accidental, begins with iambic pentameter. Tonight, tonight, it all began tonight.
Well, yeah.
Nice little nod to the Shakespeare there.
That's right. I just want to point out the first two things, like tonight, tonight. I mean, tonight is like the overbearing word that's used a lot in this song specifically. Yes. But I love how that's musically phrased, because it's tonight as it goes up, and then tonight as then it goes down. So it's like this nice little counterpoint that happens to be that kind of foreboding thing. Yes, tonight as you're like triumphant, and then tonight as they kind of bring it back down to reality.
Yeah. No, it has both a sense of hope and a sense of finality. Yeah, which is quite interesting. But yeah, they're just wrapped in the moment.
Do you remember how the line from Shakespeare goes? Because I can't remember.
Which line? Well, because we have, this is essentially the equivalent of this would be, I mean, God, there's that balcony scene's long. But the most famous line of the balcony scene is, oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Right.
Were thy name different, you would see, blah, blah, blah. And then they have a very lengthy scene. The balcony scene is actually quite lengthy in Romeo and Juliet, because they make all the plans to get married and all that stuff. Here, it's very quick. It's he comes in, they sing the song, and he's off again. And they make the plan to sort of, he comes and sees her the next day at the dress shop or whatever. So I meant to look and see if there were any lines that he actually lifts. But more likely, Sondheim is just borrowing from things that were in Lawrence's original script.
More than likely,
that's
what
he does like to do.
I know that there is an allusion to a moon in the balcony scene, and I'm blanking on how that line actually goes. But Tony continues on here, and he says, "Today, all day, I had the feeling a miracle would happen. I know now I was right, for here you are, and what was just a world is a star tonight." You know, there's this big discussion that Sondheim has had with a bunch of different interviewers about how originally what he wanted to have as the character of Tony was he was super into baseball, and he also dreamed of like going to the moon. Like there was this like the space fever kind of going on in the late 50s, which was before man stepped on the moon for the very first time. And even though he said he took most of that stuff out, I still think that the celestial imagery is still there. There's a holdover in a bunch of songs where they either talk about like driving high into the sky, or like the moon and the stars, and they constantly reference that sort of thing. And I think it's really integral to Tony's character to be like, I'm dreaming bigger than what my current reality is. Like I don't want to just not be where I am. Like I want to go out into the stars. Like that's how high I want to go to, even if it might not be exactly in the same language that a kid on the streets would necessarily use.
What's interesting, the most interesting thing to me about this stanza is in, and I can't speak for all, but I saw two separate performances of the original Broadway cast where Maria has this stanza.
Right. Yes.
Which completely changes the song and makes it Maria's song that Tony occasionally sings in. And I think that actually would make sense from a dramatic perspective. But the lines feel like they're hearkening back to something's coming, and therefore should be Tony's.
Yeah, that's hard to reconcile, right? Like, it makes more sense for Tony to sing this line or this stanza, but if Maria's the one to sing it, what's interesting is that that kind of makes it seem like she's also had that same premonition. So
right?
Is that alignment?
It makes them paired. It's like this kismet thing going on.
Right, right.
If she's also had that feeling, and we just haven't seen her express it. But no other, not since original cast, never. It's never been given to Maria again that I've seen. It's always Tony. Right.
Interesting. That's cool. And then they both sing, so they start to do the actual duet. So, tonight, tonight, mm-hmm. the world is full of light, with suns and moons all over the place. Tonight, tonight, the world is wild and bright, going mad, shooting sparks into space. Which I love that imagery, shooting sparks into space.
Yeah, and I love how the world is full of light with suns and moons all over the place sounds exactly like what, you know, someone might say, like a 16-year-old kid might say. It was like there were suns and moons all over the place.
That's right.
It's not poetic. Right. It's not poetic at all. All over the place. It's not even like I would have to teach my students that because it's completely idiomatic, weird English all over the place. But it's perfect for them.
That's really eye opening. You're right. It would be as if they were like with suns and moons and stuff like this. Like
yeah,
they don't,
exactly.
That's how they end it. You know, like things and junk.
Yeah.
without trying to be like overtly poetic about it.
Yeah. No, they're not yet. I think you're right. I like the continuation of the sort of celestial imagery with the shooting sparks into space. I don't love the going mad. That doesn't feel right to me.
How so?
It would be going crazy.
Right. Okay. Like, I see.
You know what I mean? It's like if they're gonna say that, they would probably say going crazy. Even in the 1950s, I don't think Americans often said going mad.
Yeah, that sounds like a very like Victorian thing to say now that they
yes.
think of it.
Yeah. It feels like it was either put in to make it sound more poetic, or I don't want to say Sondheim was struggling with the meter and so he cheated because he doesn't usually do that, but maybe.
Right, right.
But at the same time, we know that Bernstein had a heavy hand in these lyrics. How heavy is still a question of some debate, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be that this is one sort of place where they're showing up. But I do love the shooting sparks into space. I think that's a fun idea.
They continue on by saying, today the world was just an address, a place for me to live in, no better than all right. But here you are, and what was just a world is a star tonight.
Boof.
Explain your woof.
Today the world was just an... What does that even mean? We
yeah,
have had
I agree.
Clear, concrete... occasionally slightly poetic, but completely understandable, real feeling imagery. And then suddenly, today the world was just an address, you know, man? It's ridiculous. It is so stupid. I'm sorry.
No,
and the thing is, I know Sondheim agrees. This is one, like, in various documentaries, this is one he calls out as like, this is a terrible line. I should never let stay in the show.
Well, I think what it points to, and what he has mentioned so many times, and it's actually what I've taken to heart with any writing that I try and do, is that Sondheim is very against the, like, end this type of songwriting. You know, like, you're beautiful and pretty and gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
It's like, those are just three words meaning the same exact thing. So just pick one and go with it. You don't need to go end and end and end. And that's basically mm-hmm. what he's doing here. The world was just an address, which, whatever. A place for me to live in. You could just say the world was just a place for me to live in. Like, you don't need to have the other thing in there to make it make sense.
Yeah. And also, like, I just refuse to believe that both Tony and Maria spontaneously in their mind come up with the image of the world being an address.
Like, yeah.
Because addresses make you think of, like, mailmen and whatnot. It's like, okay, is the intergalactic mail delivery coming today at 3? Like, it is just...
Just send that to Tony, the world.
The world. Yeah, Tony,
it'll get
the world.
To me.
You know, I'll get it. You know, there's only one. It's not good. And it's by far, I think, the worst line in the song. And I think it's one of the worst lines in the show, actually. I think it's
really
quite bad.
It just stands out very, very.
Yeah.
Anytime this song goes on, I it's so funny that you had that reaction. Because from day one when I heard this line, I was like, what does that mean? I still don't really know what that means.
I would wager $50 that that's a Bernstein edition, that right. he liked that idea and he, mm-hmm. he made it stay in. But yeah, I'm kind of okay with the rest of it. No better than all right. I'm still a bit iffy on.
Yeah.
What was just a world as a star? Maybe, I'm not sure. I kind of almost wish it was like just repeated the first stanza again or something before.
Yeah, it would, I think, be better off if they could just do the repeat of the previous one. They end off by singing, good night, sleep well, and when you dream, dream of me tonight. So they break apart, of course, and they want to go and have those happy dreams of one another later on tonight, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. But a nice little, basically the same meter, same rhyme and everything, but instead of saying tonight, we have good night. So that works.
Mm-hmm. I think it works very well. And I think, again, I think it's very real, you know, like one mm-hmm. of those, you imagine you're texting your special someone late at night, and it's exactly the sort of thing you might say. Sleep well, dream of me, you know.
That's right.
It's schmoopy, but it's realistically schmoopy.
That's right.
It's not like artificially saccharine schmoopy.
That's my new autobiography, Realistic Smoopy.
and then the what you can't see just from the lyrics is the way they fit with the music. It's this entire stanza is slowed down. True. Especially in the original recording, which is actually takes this whole song much faster than they do later.
That's true. Yeah, there's something that you notice. Even the original Broadway cast apparently is sped up from what would have been actually on stage, which is surprising when they go very slow, like very slow on some of these lyrics in here. Especially the dream of me, like they really hang on the dream of mm-hmm. me. Like they make sure that there's those big spaces in between those words.
Yeah.
Now, some little background here, which I think is kind of interesting about this song. So originally, this was during like them testing it and doing rehearsals and doing, I think, out of city presentations and stuff of the musical. Originally, in this spot was the song One Hand, One Heart, which does appear later on in the show. But that's really like a real declaration of deep love that characters have with one another. And I think they quite rightly realize that, like, this feels like way too much for like a first meeting. It has to be not that deep of a commitment that they're making to one another quite yet. So they actually took some of the lyrics that happen in the quintet and then made an entire song out of that. So interestingly, the quintet actually came first, and then they then adapted that to be in the song that they sing here in this part of the show, which I think kind of does actually work quite well.
No, I think so too. I think it captures that sort of first flush of infatuation. Like I hesitate to call it love because they don't know each other.
deep lust at this point.
Deep lust. I think it captured that much better. Yeah, One Hand, One Heart. It's the wedding song. It's the song that they use during the wedding scene. And I think if people weren't sure which one, and it's sort of like that's to imagine that coming here. Yeah, would make this a full-on like operetta style tragic something,
right.
You know, it would be so over the top and so melodramatic, whereas instead we get this really wonderful, generally quite simple song just about how tonight was amazing.
Like, yeah,
tonight,
and that's what it is,
because I met you,
because I met you, because of this moment that we're in tonight is a thing that I'm going to remember because of you walking into my life. Now, you're mentioning some of Sondheim's thoughts on this song specifically. I don't know if you care to elaborate of some of the stuff that you know that he thinks about this song.
Well, I just mean as I said, you know, he very famously on this one, the credit for lyrics was Sondheim and Bernstein together, and Bernstein had a, to this day, I think, really indeterminate role in his lyrics. Obviously, the collected lyrics of West Side Story are part of, officially, they're credited now to Stephen Sondheim. They're in mm-hmm. Finishing the Hat, volume one of his two-volume collected lyrics.
Right.
No one, you know, the Bernstein estate doesn't get any royalties for the lyrics anymore, nothing like that. But there are parts, and Sondheim has said the reason he was hesitant to take full credit for the lyrics even though he had done the majority of the work, was because he thought a lot of the lyrics that Bernstein had insisted on were just bad. And he didn't want his name on bad work.
Right. No,
and
I get that.
You know, at least one interview, and Sondheim is pretty candid about this stuff when he wants to be, and he generally wants to be. He has said that, you know, the line about the today the world was just an address. If he's like, what does that mean? It's stupid. It's not realistic to the characters. It's just awful. And that he kept struggling with Bernstein, who kept doing these very poetic lyrics, trying to make it very sort of operatic feeling. And Sondheim's desire, and I think Sondheim, to his credit, was more in keeping with what Lawrence and Robbins were probably thinking for the show as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of gritty, you know, quote unquote gritty.
Yeah, right.
kind of. Well, I mean, for the time, it was tremendously gritty, right? It was super controversial to have this sort of stuff dealt with on stage. I mean, 1958, well, for God's sakes.
Yeah, to the extent that, well, actually, it's during the quintet later on in the show, like in the stage play in 57, you have a character saying, like, the other person, like, I can't wait to go to this dance because of this hot boy that's going to be there. And they had to change that line for the movie because they thought it would be too risque for movie audiences to hear the term hot as referencing another person, which is like, flash forward 30 years and, oh boy, are you going to be in for a big surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, partly because of things that Sondheim did in his shows, you know, him and his sort of friends, you know, the Kander and Ebbs and whatnot of the world, they sort of pushed and dragged the Broadway theater to where it is now, anyways. But yeah, this is an interesting song because I think generally Sondheim was able to have his way, but you can see the vestiges of the things where he wasn't. The music, it also was not written for this. It was written for Candide, which Bernstein was working at the same time, and he brought it over. Right. So essentially, it was like he was cobbling together stuff from all over the world. And it could have turned out terribly, but I think it just speaks to the fact that both Bernstein and Sondheim were geniuses, that they made it something worth listening to. It'll never be my favorite song from the musical, but it is really quite impressive what they do in just a few short stanzas. It doesn't develop, though.
No, that like, is the same thing, is that this is one of those shows. I'm a fan of West Side Story quite a bit, but when you look at the entirety of Sondheim's work, you realize that the vast majority of his songs are either very much informing characters or pushing the narrative forward. And this doesn't really, at least not a whole lot. It's basically, we met each other tonight and we're professing our love to one another in song, even though we kind of did that already over at the gym. So
yeah, he would. I would. You know, I don't know, but he would do. He would do something else with this song. He would do something else with the song. Like they would also sing about how they're scared,
right?
About what their parents will think or what their sister, you know, about all that they'll. But they'll make, you know, he would do something instead of just. Or he would have it be like a 1 minute long song effusion, you know, explosion of smoopiness, and then move on, which he sometimes also does.
So Eric, thank you so much for coming out and having a discussion about this song. We're going to be continuing on, of course.
Oh, it's been delightful.
I would like you to let people know, though, if they wanted to hear more of your thoughts on different things, how can they find you on the internet?
Sure. So the easiest way is to follow me on Twitter. It's at SJC Austenite, AUSTENITE. I host a couple podcasts, one about horror movies, one about Doctor Who. I also have blogs and things. But if you just follow me there, you'll find everything I do.
Cool. Well, once again, thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Once again, if you have enjoyed what you've heard, then you can leave a review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts. And if you can continue to tell other people and share it around, I'll be very grateful. I'll owe you a hug, if you're into that kind of thing. A big thanks to the always great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. We'll be back again next week, but for now, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.